You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Aung San Suu Kyi is the state councillor of Myanmar, a position equivalent to a prime minister. Having spent 15 years total under house arrest for campaigning for democracy, she was ousted by the Myanmar military despite winning an election and is a Nobel Peace Prize laureate. She is also currently in The Hague to defend her country against allegations of genocide. If found guilty, Myanmar will be the first country to ever be found guilty on the international stage of genocide. This month, the Gambia, a 95% Muslim state, lodged a 46-page application to the UN's highest court, alleging Myanmar had carried out mass murder, rape, and destruction of communities as part of a strategy of ethnic cleansing in Rakhine State, including against Rohingya Muslim people, who are not recognized as an ethnic group in Myanmar. Aung San Suu Kyi is thought to have little control over the military, which until recently ruled as a junta, or dictatorship. Still, she has repeatedly called UN reports misinformation and has refused to hold her soldiers accountable. In the state councillor's testimony, she argued Myanmar should be allowed to conduct its own punishment of soldiers. However, Gambia's lawyers, led by top international lawyer Philippe Sands, have zeroed in on the nature of Aung San Suu Kyi's testimony, calling it legalistic, impassive, and devoid of humanity. They have also described the crimes outlined in the UN report in great detail, in which Aung San Suu Kyi made no eye contact with the Gambia delegation and simply stared ahead.
If war crimes have been committed by members of Myanmar's defence services, they will be prosecuted through our military justice system in accordance with Myanmar's constitution. It is a matter for the competent criminal justice authorities to assess whether, for example, there had been inadequate distinction between civilians and RSA fighters, disproportionate use of force, violations of human rights, failure to prevent plundering of property or destruction, or acts of forcible displacement of civilians. Such conduct, if proven, could be relevant under international humanitarian law or human rights conventions, but not under the 1948 Genocide Convention.
That was, of course, Aung San Suu Kyi. So international trials are hard to organise as well as being difficult to conduct without bias. Aside from the fact that different regions have evolved with unique legal histories, making an international court difficult to realise, states often have no real incentive to cooperate besides economic sanctions. For the good of the world or for the good of mankind, often considered too vague to be driving forces in the international court. We don't often see international trials between countries, especially for war crimes, and it will be a long time coming before we ever see a Western superpower found guilty. This is why it's both rare and important to see something happening in the International Court of Justice. The ICJ is the principal judicial organ of the United Nations and features a rotating, diverse array of judges, which were high-ranking diplomats and lawyers in their respective countries. The seats for the judges are loosely grouped by geographical regions and legal systems, but this is of course only an informal understanding. For most of the court's history, the 5 permanent members of the UN Security Council, France, Russia, the People's Republic of China, the UK and the US, have always had a judge serving. There are of course loopholes in the International Court of Justice. Firstly, there is no full separation of powers, with permanent members of the Security Council able to veto enforcement of cases, even to those to which they consent to being bound. That's another issue. The court's judgments are only binding if the parties in the trial consent. The jurisdiction of the ICJ is not really international. There's no binding force to punish states if they violate international law, so what usually happens is the issue is escalated to the Security Council, which of course is run by old Cold War superpowers with veto power. None of those former nuclear nations would have agreed to any kind of international law if they weren't given veto power, and they would pull funding from these international institutions if it were to be taken away. All of this is now happening in real time. Aung San Suu Kyi is fighting for the world to respect her state sovereignty and the right to be free from intervention, while the ICJ is fighting to deliver justice as they see it. Legal scholars often say that these sorts of international institutions, such as the ICJ, are politically, legally, and economically bonded to the West through European hegemony. Therefore, international law is innately predatory and cannot change power dynamics. In the case of Nicaragua versus the United States, the US was found guilty but simply avoided responsibility. It remains to be seen if Myanmar will be found guilty, but even then it is unclear what will happen if they are. While little justice may happen for the Rohingya people, the case could be a chance to see international law evolve.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.